Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. And remember, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on strategic relocation when we come back. You know, the genocidal policy of Global 2000 and this New World Order are the greatest threats to our lives, our liberties, and our property since Noah's flood. And now our national leaders have subscribed to a plan created by the Club of Rome, the United Nations, the Trilateral Commission, and a whole host and plethora of other lesser policy-making think tanks, with an objective to reduce the Earth's population by 90% over the next 50 years. Now, I didn't stutter, as old George Bush would say. That's correct. 90%, they tell us, over the next 50 years. That's genocide. Now, let's not delude ourselves into believing that we're going to stop all of these mad scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians in this insane scheme to enslave the world and impose this worldwide tyranny, a new world order upon all of us. But, you know, we don't have to participate in our own demise. We don't have to help them. We don't have to finance them. And we don't have to stand helplessly by and do nothing either. That's why I contend that it's time that you and I wise up and start listening more to the God of Israel and stop following after all these crazy scientists, philosophers, these preachers and politicians, and let you and I prepare to live through and survive this global 2000, this new world order nightmare. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general, and it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free, and you can call and order one right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, our subsistence and survival school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on the email. Send us an email request for that free General Law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org. It's easy enough. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're reviewing a book here called Strategic Relocation. It's written by a strategic relocation specialist, a fella who works for, well, I'm presuming he works for rich people. He has to get paid for what he does. And most of us little guys down here at the bottom don't have $50,000, $100,000, $200,000 to pay a guy like this to come out and harden our homes, build a bomb shelter, or, you know, recommend that we move to Louisville, Kentucky, and then set us up, you know, with a Plan A, Plan B, and Plan C survival strategy with a 4-year supply of food and all the things that we're going to use over the next 2 to 4 years, or maybe the next 10 or 15. So he's written a neat book, though, and since we're kind of in this business, I mentioned to you last time, I'm one of those survivalists, one of those crazy right-wing lunatic fringe kind of guys who thinks that, honest to God, believes that the national leadership of the United States is heading us into World War III. And so I'm just a little bit skeptical about George Bush and the neocons. I'm a little bit nervous about the national debt and the derivatives markets and the stock market and all of this hype, you know, that we've been listening to from the Federal Reserve telling us about how the economy is growing and hyperinflation. You know, you start adding all these things up, you know, one at a time. You know, if we were just facing, you know, World War III like we were in 1950, but our economy was sound, and 63% of our gross domestic product was anchored on manufacturing and production. Today it's 13% and declining. I mean, we're not talking about if we don't get busy, our manufacturing and industrial base is going to disappear or it's going to be eroded. Ladies and gentlemen, it's gone. Past tense. It's in China or Japan or Formosa or South Korea. And so we're a service economy flipping burgers over here, kidding ourselves that we're rich people, and we're all flat-ass broke. That's what the bottom line is. That makes me a little nervous. And I'm sitting here saying, well, this isn't something new. It happened to the Assyrians, the Babylonians, the Egyptians. It happened to the Romans and the Greeks and the Athenians and the Spartans. And it happened to the Germans and the British. And it's more likely going to happen to the Americans. And when that happens, there's going to be some traumatic fallout. There's going to be some economic dislocations. There's going to be civil disorder and strife, just like we watched, or just like we saw on 9/11, right there in the safety and security of your living room. You got to see what happens to people in downtown Manhattan when there's an emergency, when there's a bomb goes off. You got to see what happens when a natural disaster occurs in a major metropolitan city like New Orleans. So I look at those kinds of events that transpire, and I say, well, God, what if that happened to me here, where I'm living? What if that happened to me in Boise, Idaho, or Los Angeles or San Francisco? Now, remember, New Orleans isn't Los Angeles or Philadelphia. It's the 23rd, or was the 23rd largest city in the nation. It was one of those 150 metropolitan areas that Skousen says you want to avoid, like AIDS, herpes, and VD. Nevertheless, you know, it's not a humongous city, but it was big. I think it was around 1 million people, something on that order. Way bigger than we're talking about here in this program. Way bigger than anything that you want to get involved in. But if you're in an area like that, you're in a big city like that, and you want to relocate, what do you do? So last time I said, well, what would you like? What would you think of if you had your druthers, if you just had your imagination run wild, and you know, like this is the magic makeover, and we're just going to let you have whatever it is that you can dream up, where would you want to relocate? So I suggested that we take a look at the 12 criteria that Skousen suggests as the ideal criteria for subsistence and survival. Get the hell out of New York. But if you can't, then he talks about a plan A, plan B, and plan C. Stay there in New York, but harden your plan A. And you need to put a few things into place. One of the things you need to put into place is an escape. How do you get the hell out of here? You know, on 9/11, they shut off Manhattan. You couldn't get off the island. You had to walk. You could get off the island, but you had to walk. Well, you know, if you live 50 or 75 miles away and you commute into the city every day, you know, you need to have a plan in place so that if that happens to you and you're there, you know, how am I going to get out of here? What am I going to do for me? And that's what Skousen's talking about. So we were up to number 5 last night, and he says you need a place, a state, province, or a district, a location that has low state taxes and few, if any, regulations. Here in Ozark County, Missouri, we don't have any building codes. Boy, that's a big one right there. I can go out and build a building, and I don't have to go out and get a building permit. And we have low state taxes. And I got an 80 over here, and the taxes are $96 a year. I think that's pretty neat. And so when Skousen says you need low state taxes and a lack of regulation so that you can act like free men, you know, like we Americans used to be free. Okay, well, you can't do that in New York. You've got to have a building permit. New York's not cheap. It costs a lot of money to live there. I pointed that out to you last time. I told you about a guy that has a house down in Fort Lauderdale paying $1,000 a month taxes on it. You know, for that kind of money, hell, you can live in Ozark County, Missouri on $1,000 a month. I mean, if you had an income of $1,000 a month, you could live pretty high on the hog, as they say down here. Down here in the South. Now, this little gem is becoming harder and harder to find. Now, the worst thing that happens to individuality in state governments is the tendency to have national and regional conferences for governors and state bureaucrats. You see, now they get together regularly, and then they share which latest regulatory scheme is working for them, and then other states rapidly follow the latest fad. And every time that a new regulation comes into play, you lose some of your freedom to act for yourself. Now, New York has long been the leader in intrusive regulations, though California is now the current leader. And it's ironic to note that in some rural New York State areas, you can still find small jurisdictions with very modest building codes in the very state that perpetrated this intrusion upon the whole country. Now, it demonstrates vividly how you can find patches of liberty right next door to total oppression. But it's not so in California. The state has a fetish about forcing everybody in California to the state to conform. Now, bureaucrats constantly are intruding into the backwater communities to make sure that everything is properly regulated. It's no wonder that the cost of living is so high in California. And also interesting is the backlash effect, apparently, in highly regulated states. California has pushed people so far toward the extremes of people control, with high taxation to pay for it, that it regularly experiences powerful backlashes which have lasting effects. Who would have thought that high taxing California would eventually approve the strongest of all property tax limitations? Who would have thought that their radical affirmative action injustices would finally set the stage for a complete rebellion against it? Sadly, the bureaucrats are learning how to get around these tax limitations, and they're learning how to get around the courts that are busily trying to thwart every voter backlash against state regulatory tyranny. So perhaps it won't last forever. But it does demonstrate that even with the highest levels of power politics in the world, government controllers still have to fear popular backlash. There's another side to the conformity among state trends. Certain states have steadily exhibited a stubbornness to change and to conform to what other states do. Incredibly, Oregon continues to outlaw pumping your own gas under the mistaken notion that they're saving jobs. They need an economics lesson on how forced diversions of consumer funds to one area always inhibits their beneficial use in another area. So on the other side of the coin, Oregonians wisely continue to refuse to implement a sales tax, although their leaders keep pushing them toward this alternate means of additional taxation. I think Oregonians still remember getting pushed into the income tax trap under the serene call of support education, a small tax like the national income tax that finally grew into the monster income tax. So I hope that as the pressure builds to have a new national sales tax, that people will not be fooled into accepting this tax without completely removing another type of tax like the income tax. And if you don't do this, it is all too easy for legislators to tweak up one tax here this year and then another one the next year, boiling the frog slowly by incremental increases. But I digress, and I'll cover more statistics on low taxes, low-tax states after this ideal criteria section. Let me pause here and make an observation that I've seen over the years. And that is, here in our local area, people are fleeing California. And a number of Californians have moved in here in our local area. And I'm always amazed, and the local people around here hate them. You know, if you wanted to move in here, you want to get rid of those California plates. You know, so you don't get lynched or you don't get hurt. But the Californians come in here, see, and they're all socialists in California. They're all socialists and communists. And they've been raised that way. You know, regulation comes from communism, and they've been raised that way. And the first thing they do when they come here is, oh, my God, look at the roads. We've got to have better roads. And so, you know, they go into the county commissioner and say, oh, my God, we've got to pave HH. Well, if you're going to pave HH, you got to have some money. You got to have some tax money to do that, don't you? Now, kids, we've been driving around on these gravel roads out here, you know, for generations. And we're getting along quite nicely on the gravel roads, and we travel a little slower. Had a guy come down here from Illinois not too long ago. God, he loved it. He thinks that he built a house down here, thinks it's the greatest place. And his communist leanings, his communist tendencies now, is that he's complaining about his neighbors. See, his neighbors are free. And he's complaining about all the junk they have in their yards and how they don't have that, you know, up in Chicago, where he's from, and where there's a government regulator that comes out and he makes people clean up their yards. You know, can't have these junk cars out here in your yard. Down here, you know, you measure a man's wealth by how many cars he has in his yard. You know, a guy's got six cars in his yard, pretty wealthy guy. Guy that's only got three, well, you know, he's working hard, he's trying to catch up. And you can tell, you know, how successful a woman is by how many washing machines, refrigerators, and other used appliances that she's had over the years that she now stores on her porch. So you go by some guy's, some hillbilly's house here, and maybe he's got a couple of refrigerators and two old washing machines and then a couple of three other appliances, you know, that they've used over the years. Can't throw them away. I mean, you know, he might need parts off of them or might need them sometime. You know, it was still working, you know, when we put the new one in. So they take the old one and they put it out there on the porch. And it's kind of a status symbol. Now, it is true it's a little untidy, and it is true that it doesn't look good, and it surely doesn't help property values. But, you know, we're not concerned about property values here. Hell, if we were trying to make money on real estate, we'd move to Chicago or New York or Atlanta, Georgia. People here, you know, the locals, they're just happy living in their house to keep the rain off their back. They're not really trying to make money off of it, trying to keep out of the weather. And so the outsiders come in here and they want to bring this regulation with them so that we can have a better world. So that, you know, everybody has a clean porch and everybody's yard is policed up and there aren't any used cars. There aren't any junk cars in anybody's yard. They're all down here at the junkyard. And they gotta have a fence around it. I know Lucky Sewell put a junkyard here on 609. Hell, it's a quarter of a mile off of the highway. And the people who live down 609 are all outsiders. And they're just up in arms about old Lucky having a junkyard on 609, and he doesn't have a fence around it. Well, my God, you know, if old Lucky had to build a fence around his junkyard, he'd have to raise his prices on the parts. You know, there ain't no free lunch. So I'd just soon be able to go over to Lucky, you know, and get a generator or a starter or something, you know, off of some junk car for 10 or 15 bucks rather than have to pay 35 or 40 like they do in Springfield. But, you know, up in Springfield, it costs you 40 bucks to buy a generator or an alternator. At least the last one I got up there cost me $40 for my truck. And down here, old Lucky can do that for about 25. So, you know, you have to tuck that away in your heart. Now, we got a story over here about advantageous geography with variety. And this guy Skousen says, you know, you want to have a location where you're going to like to live, you know. I take a look at Arizona and I say, oh my God, who in his right mind want to live out here in this barren desert? Well, I guess there's a bunch of them. You know, just take a look at Phoenix and Scottsdale and Tucson, and, you know, you can see people, you know, they want to live in the big city out in the desert. Well, there's advantageous geography with variety. After living in many different places during my life, I have come to prefer the aesthetic pleasures of a diverse geography. It not only has strategic benefits of protection, but it's more pleasant and it's lovely as well. I've learned to love places that have some mountains in view that give a constant visual cue as to what direction you're traveling, at least in places like the West where you have big mountains visible from a long distance. I got to pause here. You know, I'm from the West, out in the Rockies, and then in California, the mountains run north and south. See, when you're in California and you're driving up the valley, all you got to do is just look, and when you see the mountains, you can say, oh, well, I'm going north, south, east, or west, because the mountains run north and south. So if you're running parallel to the mountain chain, well, then you're running north or south, and if you're running one way or the other, you know, you can say, well, I'm going east or west. The big mountains are in the east, and the little mountains are in the west. I get out here in the Midwest, you know, and the ground's all flat. Hell, I ain't got a clue as to what direction I'm going. And then somebody said, well, look up at the sun. Okay, so look up in the sun, but you know what, moves pretty slow. So unless you want to sit there and watch the sun move for about 3 or 4 hours so that you can figure out which direction it's moving, you know, you're just as lost. So, you know, you might want to take that into consideration. I also like to have some lakes nearby for the contrast. It's kind of nice to have fertile farms in the valleys and even a river or two. I even like the desert. What a marvelous feeling of cleanliness and freedom from the pollution and noise of too many people. Deserts are not so great to live in, but they really make for a nice getaway from the crowds. The deserts of the Intermountain West are especially beautiful with their red rock, jagged cliffs jutting out of the sand, complete with wind-carved shapes like animals and even delicate arches. Then there's the coasts. While coastal areas have more disadvantages strategically than advantages, they can be very therapeutic, the air, the sea, the breeze, and the access to the ocean. Disadvantages? Yes, they are major transition areas with a formidable barrier to one side. Too easy to run into a crisis situation where you have no place to go. Coasts are inevitably entry points for external threats, both natural and military. Only with very careful planning and contingency can you find long-term safety on a coast. And even then, never right on the beach, where so many are tempted to want to live. Well, you people down there figured that out, I'm sure, by now, down in Biloxi, Mississippi. Let me make an observation here as it relates to these geographical locations. The geography of where you live makes it a whole lot harder for people to find you if you're in the mountains where you're covered by trees. Even the satellites can't look through the trees yet. But they can read a newspaper over your shoulder, you know, if you're sitting on a park bench in Central Park, unless you get under a tree. And so you might want to tuck that one away in your heart, that out in the desert, you're kind of out in the open where everybody can look at you with their satellites. And when you get into the forests and the mountains, it's a whole lot harder to find you. Just take a look at Osama bin Laden. And please note that he headed for the Tora Bora Mountains on the Pakistani-Afghan border. And you know, they've been looking for that guy for a long time, don't seem to be able to find him. And that sends me a little signal, you know, that if the world's major terrorists hide out in the mountains, that maybe, just maybe, it would be a better place for George Gordon to hide out. You know, just thinking about that. You know, we could have the Chinese attacking us, and we could have our government chasing us down like Hitler was chasing people down, and, you know, you might need to get away. And that's what they talk about. You need a little getaway place, you know, some place that you can hide out or stay out of sight, you know. So tuck that one away. Sustainable climate in an energy crisis. Number 7, sustainable climate in an energy crisis. Well, ideally, a balance is desired between a climate that is sustainable for life in an energy crisis and yet not so comfortable as to attract the soft, comfort-seeking elements of society. And this means cold, but not severe winters, avoiding the warm, semi-tropical areas, which tend to breed more insects, breed more disease, and seem to breed more crime, which becomes a year-round activity. Climate extremes don't tend to serve as isolators of certain types of people like they used to. With the almost universal use of air conditioning, people are shielded from the oppressive heat and humidity of Houston, Texas, as much as they're shielded from the severe cold of Alaska. But in a long-term energy crisis, we would begin to see a massive migration of people back to the climates that better match what they can tolerate. So over time, the hardier climates will always tend to attract and keep those who are more rigorous in their endurance of cold and better capable of handling stress. And while this is not true right now, after many years of pampered climate control in automobiles and buildings, someday it'll begin again to become a major factor. So just to talk about climate over here, we live in an area with a nine-month growing season, but it's cold and snows, and we heat with wood, and there's plenty of it. So I'm not locked into gas or oil or some other expensive fossil fuel like people in the cities. Now, if you notice that when there's high-priced fuel, they always talk about New England being on heating oil and how the heating oil is so expensive and, oh, my God, we're just locked in. Hey, listen, if you're going to live in the city or in some town and then you're going to heat with oil or gas, you can just sit down, shut up, fold your hands, and write the checks. Because that's, they got you. Whereas, if you're self-sufficient, you know, you live in Clinton, Arkansas, or you live in the environs, you live out here on 10, 20, 5, or 10, or 15, or 20 acres, you got a little wood lot out here. And an acre of woods grows two-thirds of a cord of wood per year. And where I'm located, I need about two or three cords of wood per year. So I need about, 3 acres of land with woods on it that grows approximately two-thirds of a cord per acre per year. And I get six-thirds, that's two cords. And if I have to have a little bit more, then I've got to pick out another acre. But, 5 acres of land with woods on it and a building site here gives you the fuel that you need to heat your house in the winter forever because it continually renews itself. Now, I know that a lot of you people say, well, who in his right mind would want to cut wood and heat with wood when I can turn up the thermostat? Well, I'm living here in an ice storm this week. And up here in Springfield, there are, somewhere around 100,000 people without power. And people without electricity don't have heat. And when the electricity goes off here, it doesn't affect my heat. And we live in an Amish community or close by. And the Amish, they don't have electricity and they have heat. I just wanted to point that out. So when we talk about subsistence and survival, you should be thinking about heat, especially if you want to live in Minnesota. You know, if you want to get up north and where it gets to be really cold, in North Dakota, and you're going to get out there on the plains, where there's lots of cold and no trees, you want to be thinking about, well, how am I going to heat my house when there's no electricity? And he covers that in number 7. Now we're talking about regional high-tech communications access and moderate to low consistent growth and freedom to exercise self-defense with personal arms and the fewest possible major nuclear targets around you and the legal tolerance for alternative medicine and low crime and non-intrusive, honest, approachable local government. No, these are all subjects that need to be talked about, need to be thought out before you move out. Now, you people in California, Florida, and New York have a high tolerance for regulation and control that a lot of us that are out here in the free parts of America, where we're not regulated and controlled, I don't think I could make it in New York City. I don't live well around bureaucrats directing operations. That's what drove me out of Boise, Idaho. I just couldn't handle OSHA and the EPA and the State Tax Commission and Rod Johnson and all the rest of that gang of bureau rats up there. I said, okay, let me get the hell out of Dodge and you people take over and run this thing and just live here happily ever after. And every time I watch 9/11 films in New York and Manhattan, every time I watch Hurricane Katrina, boy, I thank my lucky stars I got the hell out. And Boise's a nice place. But the bureaucracy there, and you got to remember that that's one of those states with the conservative government, and it was more than I could handle. So let's talk here for a second here about moderate to low consistent growth. People want to live in areas that are grow, like Las Vegas. They're growth. Well, that's because they want to make money there. They're making money off of growth. They're building houses. They're working in construction. Here, where I live, the population in 1940 was 14,000, and today it's 10,000. It's less today. The population of Ozark County, Missouri, less today than it was in 1940. That's not a prime growth area. In fact, there's no manufacturing, there's no industry here, and the young people have to leave here to go to the city to make their living. Boy, that's just ideal for a recluse like me. Now, everyone seems to be trying to move to the growth hotspots of America, but high growth is something that is always disruptive and bad for society. Local governments tend to make bad decisions in the heat of public demands to solve new growth problems. And remember, it's an illusion that enticing new companies to move into an area through tax breaks and condemnations of private property will build an increased tax base. Because on balance, the increased costs of additional infrastructure, the schools, the sewers, the water systems and roads, they always exceed the growth of the tax base. Not to mention the injustice to the economic rights of those whose businesses and trades are threatened by those who can start up new companies on subsidized government property or with unfair tax breaks. This creates class conflict and cultural hostilities. They also increase in areas that get a reputation for lots of new jobs. Much as multiculturalism is touted today, it always brings more conflict than understanding, and especially when it's crammed down people's throats in the name of political correctness. So for all of you politically correct people, stay right where you're at, would you? Don't come here. In fact, that's kind of the mantra of the locals around here, you know. Come here, enjoy the lakes, catch your fish, have a good time, spend your money, and then get the hell out of here and go home. And that's the way we see you here in the Ozarks. Well, at least here in Ozark County. And let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law School or the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective, 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement only. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. And if you want more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives. That can be accessed through the webpage as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date at our website. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend these books, periodicals, papers, newsletters, and so on to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we hand out do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse or recommend will necessarily reciprocate by endorsing and recommending the Law Hour and Editorial Review. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoint is not necessarily totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you do hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Here's a reminder that we're offering a new class on health and healing, which covers the alternative healthcare methods and measures being used for the treatment and healing of such things as cancer and other degenerative diseases. And we're going to concentrate on how to prevent these degenerative diseases by using the Bible and biblical law. So if you're prejudiced against the Bible, etc., this is not for you. We'll forget that. The use and application of essential oils, of which 32 of these essential oils are mentioned in the Bible, and supernutritional foods containing more nutrients and fewer calories. That excludes Hershey bars and includes more broccoli. And the list of things that we're going to cover in this class could get pretty long. The class also includes hands-on teaching, paperwork, allergic reaction testing and training, muscle testing, so you can do it at home, acupressure application training, homeopathics, pressure points, things like that. All kinds of crazy things. Things that are not, you know, orthodox, allopathic, you know, pills, drugs, and shots type health ideas and concepts. And much, much more. And the class will be February the 5th through the 9th here in Isabella, Missouri. So if you're interested, call us here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. I want to point out that the instructor, my wife, who's pretty knowledgeable about health, healing, one thing and another, is a 28-year cancer survivor, living her life happily ever after. Having cured cancer, having lived with it for 28 years, and controls it through diet and essential oils and alternative health practices. So whether you're sick or you just want to prevent getting sick, prevent the disease, this is a class I think you'll want. Remember, that's going to be February the 5th through the 9th. Here in Isabella, Missouri. Now, we're also planning to go down to Austin, Texas, February 26th through the 2nd, 2007, with tax and status. So if you missed the last one there in Austin, Texas, February 26th through March 2nd, tax and status, give us a call. You have to have an invitation. You don't just show up at the door and say, I'd like to go to school. We operate a private school. It's not public. It's not open to the public. All right, we talked about moderate to low consistent growth. You know, most people want to live in a high growth area. High growth areas cause a lot of social problems and unrest. So the truth of the matter is, if you're looking for subsistence and survival in a stable environment, we'd like to have a little growth, but we want to make sure that the growth is slow, steady, and responsible. None of this boom and bust cycle stuff. And then if you want long-term stability, you want to be in an area that just goes on and on and on and just doesn't grow and it just kind of stays the same. And that's where I'm at and that's where I like it. Great place. Don't come here. If you want to relocate, do not come to Ozark County. Go someplace else, would you? Now, you need to relocate someplace. If you're in Los Angeles, you need a spot to go to. But go wreck somebody else's neat spot, all you Californians. Now, we have regional high-tech communications access. You know, you need to make sure that the area that you're selecting is upgrading or is intending to upgrade its communications infrastructure to take full advantage of telephone, cable, satellite, and internet technologies. These are your keys to being able to access the burgeoning information base in the world without having to live in a major metropolitan area to get it, with all of the attendant problems that go along with it. So make sure that your area has numerous local internet providers And you can access this cyber information library without long-distance charges. If you haven't become computer literate yet and communicate by email or use the Internet for searching out information, I highly recommend that you do so. And a pause here. You know, I'm one of those Internet computer illiterates, so I just hire a guy who does it. We have it, but I don't use it. And my Internet man here, he tells me that we live in the backwaters of reality. We don't have high-speed communications. And so I hear you. If you're in some kind of a business, and I had a guy here from California one time. He moved out here from, Sacramento, California. And he moved here to Ozark County, bought himself a little place over here. He needed a retreat, but he was in the computer business. I don't know, he was a programmer or whatever, you know, these computer guys do. And he got out here and he found out that he couldn't make it here. He didn't have the kind of Internet access, the kind of computer hookups and telephone, you know, that he needed to make his living. So he was here for a few months and he had to pack up and go back to California. Couldn't make it here. So you need to be thinking about that. And so I often tell people, you know, are you really sure you want to move out here to the boondocks and the sticks? Because maybe you can't make a living here. And you need to be thinking about that. You know, people get evangelistic zeal. You know, they're going to get out of the city and they're going to go do this or that. You know, you city people, you get out here in the country, you're going to starve to death out here now. So let me warn you ahead of time. And this isn't something you want to take lightly or you just want to pack up and move out. You know, most of you people are used to jobs and the regulations and controls and the socialist environment and the safety net and all the trappings of society that go along with it. If you people actually had to live off of what you produce with your own two hands, I think most of you would starve to death. I often tell people, you know, if I went to New York and gave the average New Yorker a live chicken, he'd make a pet out of it and starve to death with the chicken. And that's just where reality's at. We rely on chicken McNuggets from McDonald's. The average guy couldn't kill a chicken. They wouldn't know what the hell to do with the thing after he killed it. Wouldn't know how to pick it, pluck it, they call it. I don't think the average guy could kill a cow, butcher it, cut it up, and then take it in and cook it. That's why we rely on Walmart and butchers and factory meat packing plants. And you stop to think about all of the skills and abilities that we Americans had when we lived on the farm are gone. They're gone. And people that live in the cities and rural, I mean in the urban areas, and have divorced themselves from the rural lifestyle are now virtually helpless. Now that's my observation. I've been watching people for years and years. Hell, we have an observance here called the Passover, and you know when you prepare the Passover lamb, you have to cut its throat and kill it. I have people out here fainting in the parking lot at the sight of blood, for crying out loud. Boys and girls, when you go into McDonald's and you order that Big Mac, did you think that the hamburger came from an animal that didn't bleed? I mean, I just wanted to share that. These aren't vegetarians, you know. These are people that are just everyday Joe Six-Pack people. And they say, oh, I want to watch the Passover. So, okay, bring him over here. And I take a knife and I stick it in his throat and cut his throat. And people have literally fainted right here in the parking lot. Not everybody, you know. But sometimes they don't faint, they puke. I mean, they just get sick and puke right there in the parking lot watching an animal butchered, so I get a little nervous about that. And then we have number 10 here, the freedom to exercise self-defense with personal arms. You know, about 40% of us here in this country have a gun. And I was kind of surprised at the numbers. You know, 40% of us own guns. Wow. But the bad news is 60% of us don't, and 60% of us don't want to, and the 60% want to take yours away from you. And that's kind of troubling. That's kind of a big problem. And everywhere where you have gun control, you have tyranny. In fact, in Russia, where they take guns away from people routinely in Germany and places like that. You have gun control. You have political tyranny. And in those countries, the Anglo-Saxon countries, where we have traditionally kept our right to keep and bear arms, we have had a higher level of political freedom than in other regions of the world. I just throw that out for your consideration. Now, I don't think that we're going to have guns here in the United States too much longer. I think that we're on the treadmill, just like the Aussies and the British and everybody else. But I got to pass this on to you that down in Miami, Texas, back in the 70s, I believe this was, they had a problem down there with rape. So, I don't know, the local officials, probably even the city police or somebody, they organized a training program for women. And they started taking women out and training them in the use of guns. I imagine they licensed and bonded and insured all these ladies and gave them a concealed weapons permit. But the moral of the story is they trained, I don't know, 9,000, I think it was. 9,000 women. Now, you've got to remember that Miami, Florida is a big metropolitan area. I mean, there's millions of people live there. And they trained 9,000 women in this major metropolitan area where they were having one rape a day. I think it was one a day, 365 a year. Which I guess in a big city like that probably isn't that big a deal. One rape a day, you know, out of millions of people probably. But the rape rate went from one a day to one a month after 18 months. And, you know, you just have to kill a few of those rapists. And that sent me a signal. I said, you know, what we need to do in this country to eliminate rape is to arm every woman in America. I think every female, every woman in America should be packing heat in her purse. Yeah, it's going to kill a few boyfriends and probably kill a few husbands, you know, that get a little amorous. But, you know, think about the long-term benefits. You know, you walk up to some woman, you know, you want to hit on her, you know, you'll be pretty damn careful about what you say and about how you say it, wouldn't you? I mean, if you were suspicious that that woman, you know, sitting at the end of the bar had a .38 snub nose and that cute little purse that she's got up there on the bar, you know, you'd be a little cautious about messing with her, wouldn't you? Anyway, it kind of eliminated rape down there, put a hell of a damper in rape down there in Miami, Florida, and I think that it'll just about do that anyplace. Any place. And so Joel Skousen points that out. He says, you know, the primary reason that everyone who is capable should have the right to have personal arms, especially a handgun, is the simple truth that it is your greatest and potentially only effective defense against a criminal aggressor when you do not have instant access to police protection, which is never the case. So simply put, a criminal's greatest advantage, the time delay in meeting with strong resistance, is eliminated by the armed homeowner or businessman with an effective weapon. Indeed, criminals go out of their way to target subjects who they view are the least likely to be armed. Criminal prosecution is hardly a deterrent to hardened criminals, but the fear of meeting an armed victim is. Well, that's pretty logical. You know, if I was going out here looking for somebody to rape, rob, and pillage, the last guy that I want to take on is some guy that's armed. And here, in this county, in this local area, I don't know of anybody that isn't armed. There must be one or two, I suppose. But, you know, all of these farmers that are around me over here, all of them have guns. Most of them have their guns in the back window of their pickups. I mean, they just travel around armed all the time. Primarily, you know, they're looking for coons and possums and bears and other predators, you know, coyotes primarily, you know, getting after their lambs or getting after their calves or something like that. And so they want to have a gun with them so if they get a chance, they can shoot them. But you know, the fact that my neighbor over here, old Dale Smith, you know, is armed, you know, was quite a deterrent. I'd never go over there and break into Dale's house. Hell, I might run into Dale. That'd be just the worst thing that could happen, you know, if you walked into Don Uchman's place, you know. Well, Don was in the living room, or worse yet, in the bathroom. And you're a burglar, or you're an intruder, and you walk in there because you probably wouldn't walk out alive. Well, of course, dead people don't walk, but I'm pretty sure that my neighbors around here, and we don't have any crime here. You know, about the worst thing happens, you know, when they make the weekly sheriff's report here in our local paper, the Ozark County Times. About the biggest thing is old Bessie Ballmortal ran into a deer and had to be taken to the hospital because she bumped her forehead on the steering wheel. Or, you know, some guy runs off the road over here, or there was some vandalism, you know, somebody took old Don Uchman's outhouse and tipped it over down the hill or something, you know. Things like that happen, you know. There's always fun and frolic going on, and there's a little bit of mayhem, you know. There's some guys, they get kind of nasty and have to take a baseball bat and bust the window out of your pickup or something. You have vandalism, you know, things like that. We don't have any graffiti down here, and that's because I suspect that most of the people down here don't read and write and spell too good, and so there's no point trying to write Kilroy was here because most of the people couldn't spell Kilroy anyway. So there's no point in spending good money to buy a can of spray paint to go out here and tear up or wreck somebody's wall or fence or business or something like that because we can't spell real good anyway. So I noticed that one thing about New York and big cities is that they've got artistic people who can read, write, and spell, and boy, they let you know about that too. They've got pictures and they write on anything, whether it moves or is standing still. I didn't like that, so that's another good reason for the location that I'm in. Well, anyway, getting back here to guns. If you're one of the soft people who believe that everyone would be peaceful if we just took away all the guns, let me beg to differ. Most people in the world are basically good, pretty nice people. But there's an ever-growing percentage who are either inherently bad or aggressive. These people need a much higher degree of consequences to deter their evil tendencies. Now, I'm a firm believer that society as a whole has lost the will to prosecute criminals with effective deterrence. Jurors are susceptible to every phony, tearful excuse that defense lawyers can throw out. Judges are increasingly liberal and more hostile to gun owners than they are to criminals. With the growth of bad philosophy in criminology, sociology, and parenting, I have absolutely no confidence that society will ever solve the crime problem. So that leaves us then with an armed citizenry that can provide the deterrence that is necessary. In fact, it's interesting to track the rapid decline in violent crime against homeowners in virtually every jurisdiction that has encouraged and implemented the broadening of the concealed weapons law, allowing ordinary citizens to carry concealed weapons for personal defense. Naturally, the establishment media attempts to credit the time-worn and failed establishment efforts, more money, and more police for the downturn. But one thing is sure, the downturn in crime during the late 90s is not due to increased unconditional love and understanding that the sociologists tout. This failed philosophy only ensures that an ever-increasing number of criminals will continue to be parasites upon you and me. The second reason for private arms, the least used but the most critical for long-term security, is that they significantly deter government aggression. And it does work. There's not a single tyrannical government that can maintain power without disarming the civilian population first, and then keeping it that way. This was the primary reason, other than the helping hand of God, that Americans won the Revolutionary War against Britain. They didn't have to rely on a formal army. They could muster a volunteer militia on their own. The civilians had their own weapons, and this was also the main reason that the founders of the Constitution wanted an armed citizenry after the war. They even feared the potential for tyranny by the federal government that they were forming. So your founding fathers were more concerned about a tyrannical government when they put the Second Amendment into your Constitution than they were about criminals or about shooting deer. The right to keep and bear arms, boys and girls, doesn't have anything to do with going out hunting. It has everything to do with keeping radical, tyrannical government under control. And when you lose your guns, you lose your freedom. In this country, they'll have a hard time because, you know, you get 40% of the people that are armed. 200 million weapons. 200 million. Make sure that you get one. Make sure you learn how to use it. And then keep some ammunition for it. And then we come to the fewest possible major nuclear targets. You know, he's got a lot more to say here on handguns and a lot more to say on the Second Amendment, but I'm not going to, you know, sit here and bore you to tears, you know, with a sermon on the Second Amendment and your right to keep and bear arms. Just point out, just keep in mind, states that have strict gun control laws, like Massachusetts, are states we want to avoid, like AIDS, herpes, and VD. Let the Saab sisters live in Boston and let the Russians come and nuke all of those Saab sisters and get rid of them. It's kind of like survival of the fittest. Let them get rid of the weak ones. Good place for all of you gun control nuts to live is in the downtown urban areas. God bless you. Let's get all of you people together in one location so that you can all be exterminated at the same time. Mercifully, of course, in a nuclear blast. Now, the rest of us over here ought to take a look at what we saw down there in New Orleans. Take a look at what we saw on 9/11 in downtown Manhattan. Wake up to reality. Start thinking for a change. And then get the hell out of Dodge while you can still walk. He comes to number 11. You need to be in a location with the fewest possible major nuclear targets. And although you will not be able to avoid the subsequent fallout that accompanies a nuclear war, you must stay clear of the most probable blast areas of military targets suffering a direct hit. And you can prepare against fallout. But dealing with blast areas is a much riskier proposition. And I can guarantee you that someday metro areas like Washington, D.C., Norfolk, Virginia, let's see here, where are we, 25, and Jacksonville, Florida, San Diego, California, Seattle, Washington, and a few others will be wiped off the face of the map. And it's only a matter of when, not if. And this will be covered in detail in the section of threat analysis on war. We'll take a look at that next time, threat analysis. And then finally, number 12, he says, the legal tolerance for alternative medicine. There's a growing illusion that the establishment medical community is capable of solving all of the world's health problems, given enough time and money. This is a great falsehood, and the real truth increasingly demonstrates that even these so-called miracle cures and drugs of the past are becoming ineffective due to mutant forms of bacteria, parasites, and viruses. Well, that's been my observation. I mean, you know, they've been fighting cancer now, you know, since Nixon declared war on cancer back about 1972, isn't it? Spending billions and billions and billions of dollars on this damn war on cancer, and what in the hell have they got for it? When Nixon started that program, about one person in every four would come down with cancer in his lifetime. Today, 30 years later, it's one person out of two, and they promise us one out of one by the year 2020. Everybody's going to get cancer. Allopathic medicine is a failed philosophy, and that's what it is, just a crummy philosophy. So you want to be in an area that has a tolerance for alternative medicine. You know, let us take care of ourselves. Yeah, I'm about out of time again. I've got to cut it off here, and we'll take this up again next time here, talking about strategic relocation next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Meanwhile, let me remind you that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide 7 days a week over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, then please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night, God willing. So, until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.